This December, the Brothers Murph Battle Royale Christmas Edition is coming down a chimney near you.
A special podcast series outside our normal Tuesday releases. Every Thursday this December, coming to your device.
8 movies, 4 hosts, in a bracket-style tournament, they'll be going head-to-head. Mano-y-mano, Murph against Murph, Brown against White. It's only one movie can end up on top.
The ultimate Christmas movie podcast. Which Christmas movie will reign supreme?
Quarterfinals, semifinals, and then one giant Christmas Brothers Murph spectacular. It's gonna be a bloodbath. Or at least a nice debate about the merits of Christmas movies and family.
Coming this Thursday, December 1st. Christmas is coming.
It's coming for your life.
Okay.
Welcome to the Brothers Murph Get Smart, a weekly podcast where two brothers, namely myself, Nick Murphy,
and myself, Michael Lee Murphy,
work to get more knowledgeable is the word, about this big, beautiful world that we live on. And joining us this week, as you can hear her, is
Casey Brown.
And joining us from DC is
Dylan White.
And we will be talking this week about a very interesting, very sexy topic. That is Dungeons and Dragons, Dungeons and Dragons, yeah.
The sexiest of all the games.
All of the games. We're all nerdy here, guys, right? So
yep.
We want to talk about some Dungeons and Dragons, which, despite us all being pretty nerdy, we don't know that much about. So we brought someone who does know a lot about it.
Yay!
A Mr.
Chris Wolf.
And Chris Wolf is our Dungeons and Dragon expert, and he has over 7 years of experience being a dungeon master. And do you ever play not as a dungeon master, or
it started out that I wasn't the dungeon master, started out playing the game like a normal player, and then I was the only person who knew anything about the game, and so you're kind of forced into that role. But yes, I did play before.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I know some people, like, that's what they do, that's all. Mm-hmm. they DM, which stands for dungeon master. And if we ever say D&D, that's just Dungeons and Dragons.
Let's let Chris be the expert.
Okay? Sorry,
we're talking
sorry,
about
sorry.
Like, all right, so you're a dungeon master.
You know what? I played one game one time, so fine, whatever.
All right. So, Chris, can you give us a little breakdown of like Dungeons and Dragons? Because people have been playing this for a long time.
Yes,
right?
Since 1974.
Okay, wow.
Wow, there's like a year?
Bunch of bell-bottom dudes like, let's play elves and dwarves. I'm like, let's rename that. Like, all right, cool.
Exactly. No, Gary Gygax. It's like the hardest last name in the world to pronounce. Gygax. Which sounds like the guy to create D&D, right? Like, that's like exactly how you imagine his name spelled.
Exactly.
Gary Gygax. Have you ever driven to Vegas? It's like that street Zizix that you drive and pass. He was born there, I bet.
Yep.
On Zizix Street. Anyway.
I think Minnesota, but close enough, right?
It's it's comforting to know that someone is doing exactly what they were put on this earth to do. But Gary Gygax was like, this is what I was supposed to do. This is why God sent me here.
Yeah, definitely.
I was sent by the Lords to show you fantasy realms you could never imagine. And we're just like, get in the trash can, Gygax. He's like, all right, but someday you guys are going to know my name. And now we do.
And here we are talking about him. Yeah. So he and one of his friends kind of invented this game after being... They like played a lot of those. Do you guys know Warhammer 40K? They're like these big military kind of games.
Yeah, I play with 40K.
So, like little miniatures and stuff.
Yeah,
and...
but it's like a whole army. You know, like you don't play just like one person. You're in command of this whole army. So he was like, that's a cool idea. But what would be better is if we brought this in and you got to play an individual person in a whole world. And that's kind of where there are these two roles in Dungeons and Dragons. There's players and then there's the Dungeon Master. And so the players all control one player kind of in the world that the Dungeon Master creates. So,
like one player each, or there's five guys controlling one dude?
No, one player each.
Okay, yeah.
Right. So you would have your own character, and Casey would have her own character. And what's cool is that they can be whatever you want them to be. And I've always explained Dungeons & Dragons, like, you remember when you were a kid and you played pretend, like, with your friends in the yard?
We played Rugrats all the time.
Nice.
Yes.
So this is like that with rules to make it fair, because I always had, like, a jerk friend who's like, I have a ray gun, and I'm like, I've got a force field. And they're like, well, my ray gun goes through your force field. And I'm like, that's not right.
That's not how force fields work.
I teach kids. I've seen so many arguments about, like, the rules of their fantasies. Like, no, that's not how that works. And be like, yeah, dude, I can jump right over that. He's like, no, because there's like an inhibitor. And I'm like, dude, that's pretty good vocab word, little child. So, okay. So this is a way to kind of let you can be free to imagine, but then there are, you know, like you said, people can't break the game.
Exactly. The rules are really there to give structure to, like, this really, like, imaginary game. And what's great is that because you can think of anything, I feel like it's the greatest game because any story can be told. And that's really what it is. It's like this collaborative storytelling experience where the Dungeon Master kind of creates a world and runs all these other characters and all these other people. And then all of the players get to react to that however they want. And because, you know, with video games, like, you can't do everything that you want because we're limited by technology. You can't say whatever you want, and, you know, the people on the screen can't just say whatever back. But as people, like, we can do that. Right. And so that's what's great about D&D is you can tell any kind of story, and it's also just a great way to hang out with friends.
Aww, that's awesome.
Or strangers that you meet.
Okay, so this is can I just ask really quickly of the group? Obviously, Chris, you've done this a lot, but I'm just curious, like, Nick, Mike, how often have you played this before? Because I have played Dungeons and Dragons one time, and I apologize to my old work, but it was when I was at work at UCLA as a security guard. We were playing in the Anderson School of Management in one of the rooms.
Yes.
We had a bunch of Cheetos and Coke, and it was like over the holidays, so we said, no one's going to be here.
True.
And so I played one time for like 4 hours, and it was really fun, but that's like my entire experience about it. So, like, what have you played before, Nick?
I mean, very, like, similar kind of situation with me. I've played at a local game store called Emerald Knights over in Burbank.
Oh, yeah.
On Wednesday night, they have D&D night, and it's actually really, really popular, which is cool. And you can kind of, like, jump in games there, kind of jump in and out. And so I've done that before, and that's really fun. But we're, like, a couple months into a campaign, so, like, me and my friend Billy, who went, had, like, no idea what was going on. So the whole time, we're kind of like, okay. And then everyone else is, like, asking all these, like, insightful questions because they knew things to ask. But we're kind of like, we don't know anything. Oh, and we were like level one people. So we were just like, yeah, it was not good. And then
these guys all have, like, just beefy armor. And you're like, we're just going to stand back and take photos of you guys. You look really cool.
One had a sword
so
that he could, like, talk to. And, like, what? it like captured the power of the sun. It was weird. And I was like, got a dagger, you know? So, and then, like, I think what happens very often, and maybe you have experience with this, Chris, is, like, it's very easy to start a game of D&D, but it's very hard to keep it going. I've started about two or three different campaigns with mostly with my friend Billy, who really wants to play too. And they just, we'll get like one game in, and then the whole group just dissipates into thin air, and then it just goes away forever. And so I've never really gotten to play, although I've always really wanted to.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's definitely very easy to start a game of Dungeons and Dragons. But because it's logistically hard to get, you know, six people kind of all on the same schedule and all to agree to meet very consistently, it's a great thing to be like, oh, we should play D&D, and then you do it a week later, and then you're like, we got to do this like every week or every other week.
Yeah, this is a thing.
For a while.
Right. Right, yeah. So that's why we have you here, Chris, because we really want to play D&D.
Perfect.
And we can make our schedules work if you just DM for us.
True.
I would love
to. Show us the way, man.
And that's what this is about. And
yeah.
What, okay, what about
we
you?
Want to get a
have
little
you, Mike, have you played?
Info. I'm the same level as you. I started, or as Nick, I guess, we all have played like a one day of a campaign. It was cool. Like, I got to create a character, so I made, I had just read the Dark Tower series by Stephen King, so I was like, dude, I want to be like this weird, like, cowboy gunslinger dude, and it was awesome, but we never got far enough in because I had all these ideas for like things that would happen, and he was trying to find his family that he'd been separated from, and it was this whole thing, and I never got to fully explore my awesome character.
But. And see, that's what's great is because it is collaborative. Like, you've come up with this whole, like, ideal for this character that you had and you wanted him to be like, oh, I want him to find my family. And my job, kind of as the DM, is to both make that interesting for you and also work with you to kind of tell the best story for everyone, but also for you. And that's really, like, the most challenging part of being a dungeon master is kind of taking everyone's, like, personal desire, like, what they want to get out of the game,
right,
and trying to give it to them without only catering to one person.
Sure. And obviously you probably as a dungeon master have an idea of a story that you want to tell or you want to bring these characters through. So do you say, you know, we were all going to play in this room. Is it up to us to give you like a character bio prior to beginning so that you have as much information, or do you like to kind of just feel it out in that first campaign and then, you know?
Usually it's a good mix. So what'll happen if I'm starting a new group is, you know, I'll message everyone on Facebook or we'll all talk or something and I'll say, hey, this is like the time period because there's a setting. So, like, some D&D games can take place in, like, the Star Wars universe or like, just modern day, like, 2016, like, Los Angeles. I just had a game that was like that.
What are you doing that? Is it, like, fantastical? Or are you like, we went down to Del Taco?
Definitely the Del Taco.
So
this was
crushing,
like,
student debt, so, like...
This is, like, ended up being, like, a government conspiracy kind of campaign where, like, these guys explored different, like, conspiracy theories and, like...
Nice.
You know, maybe some that's were true, cool. Maybe some weren't. And it was a really like cool that. Vehicle to, like, so talk about that. Or there's traditional D&D, which takes place in a fantasy
it's
setting.
In the Forgotten Realms universe.
Forgotten Realms is kind of the default. And that was a world kind of created by the company that made D&D as a default world. So that, because there's all different kinds of DMs and there's all different kinds of players. And not every DM wants to create a whole universe from scratch.
Sure.
I would imagine it's hard.
It's very difficult.
It seems hard even if you had kind of a base point to jump off of.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you said, you can do anything. You can create anything. And I don't know if you guys have ever just tried to think into the void of space.
Absolutely.
It's difficult. So anything that gives you kind of an in, not difficult for Nick. He gave me a look right there. He's just like, that's tough for you?
I was going to say something. I was like, nah, don't worry about it.
We never asked Dylan if Dylan had ever played D&D before.
My bad,
like,
Dylan.
What's your experience,
do you have any experience
with it?
Yeah, actually, I played a little bit back when I was in Israel with like a couple of people. And like everyone else's story, I never made it to the end of the campaign at all.
Yeah.
Okay. But my character did become a tiger person and then got eaten by the rest of my crew at one point.
That's fair.
So, yeah.
As is tradition.
Exactly.
I was going to say, can you do that? I mean, I guess you can do anything. Can I just be like, I'm going to shoot Nick now?
Well, yeah. So that is definitely something that you can do. Like, inner
Dick
party
by your friends,
violence or inner party like fighting is very real. And you don't want it, like, in the sense of, you know, the hope is that they all come together and they're the Fellowship of the Ring and they, like, make it and they carry the ring all the way to Mordor and no one, like, kills each other, right? Like,
happy,
and so that's your hope. But oftentimes, like, if you're trying to play a realistic character, and a lot of people's goal as a player is to be very, very realistic, like, have emotions that someone would have if they were going through this, you know, situation. And sometimes, like, that leads to fighting. And Dylan's character died, and that also happens because as a DM, another like balance that you want to strike is, like, the world is a very scary place, and, like, you can die by doing, like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm gonna jump off this building
because nothing's gonna happen
because I play D&D and, like, that's fine, and you're like, actually your character just died, like, I'm sorry. But you also want to mix that with, you know, giving people a sense of adventure and
sure
they can actually do things. So there's definitely a DMs also ask, like, are you sure a lot.
That is
someone's
true.
Like, okay, well, there's like a bomb on the other side of the door. I open the door and you're like, are you sure you're gonna open that door? And that's often like a
kick
little
it
boring.
In dude.
All right. Can I ask a beginner question? Mm-hmm. You guys have said the word campaign a lot. What's that? Because I played one game one time.
Well, all of role-playing is about running for office. And so that's really all.
You have to raise a lot of money.
And stuff.
I thought that that was going to be over.
You're just running for office. In the end game is really boring because it's usually you doing like paperwork and then it's like... Okay,
very administrative, very bureaucratic.
Bureaucracy. Yep.
Yeah. No, a campaign is generally a string of sessions, a session being, you know, one time that we all get together and play. And they can be short. You can have a campaign that, you know, spans only two or three sessions, or it can be just ongoing. The group that taught me how to play originally, the first like core group that I was a part of, had been playing the same campaign for I think 8.5 years.
Yeah.
Oh my
by the time
God.
They were like they're playing their characters like sons. And like, only one of them was playing the character that they originally created.
Old ass man.
Yeah, no, totally. And so
I'll roll for dexterity.
Yeah, exactly.
Gonna take my fiber pills. Critical hit.
And you guys actually have just touched on another really important aspect of D&D is that there are dice,
which is
kind of what it's known for, is being like a nerdy like thing to do at a table when you got a bunch of dice and people don't understand what all the dice mean.
Yeah.
And really the dice are just a way to replicate the randomness of being alive in the universe.
Sure.
Like sometimes you do something well and sometimes you don't, no matter how much experience you have. And so the dice help kind of keep that.
It's fun, you know.
It's nice.
Like you never know what something you do is going to work, and there's a series of memes that went around that were hilarious to me at least, and it's because you've seen like memes that are like dog shaming, like people like shame their dogs with like signs.
Right.
There came out a meme that was dice shaming, where people like were shaming their dice, and it was like, you left me on fire for 4 straight turns, and it's just like, and it's all these things about shaming their dice, and it was really, really funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, beginner. So I want to play D&D.
Yeah.
I come to you and I say, Chris, can we do this? And you say, yes, but you need a character because we all play individual characters, which we've discussed. Okay, so what, as someone who's never played before, what do I do with that information? Do you as the DM, the Dungeon Master, give me like a sheet that I just like fill in the blank and fill in my answers? And what kind of characters, because I think there's like traditionally when you think of D&D, there's like elves and... Uh-huh.
Wizards
and different types of like
Russians.
Absolutely.
I believe there's some kind of distinction between like your class, but your race and all of that. Like, what the hell is all that?
Yeah.
What goes into building a character?
Yeah.
That's a great question. And the first thing that I always want a player to think about is not what kind of class they're going to be, which is like your job. Or what race you're going to be, which is
dwarf,
elf,
always
human.
Dwarf.
I really want them to think about what kind of person they want their character to be. And hopefully, you know, the class and the race fit into that in some way. But that's what I really want you to think. So first thing is think about who your character is, what kind of character you want to play. And then we try and find a race that matches that. And there's thousands of races in the sense of there's so much content that has been created for D&D. But if we're talking what most people play, there's about 8 that are traditionally used. Yeah. Humans, halflings, elves, dwarves, half-orcs, dragonborn. And then you pick a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, your jobs are clerics, which are, you know, healers, priests kind of people, and fighters, and sorcerers, and wizards, and warlocks,
monks. There are differences between sorcerers and wizards and warlocks?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my
absolutely.
God. Yeah. We are just skimming the surface
So there's like these, there's like these classic types. Could I just be like, I want to be like a goo person.
And
I'm like, mostly get carried around in a bucket, but I can kind of like slop myself out of that and go into cracks. Can I be like a goo dude?
Well, like, is that your whole purpose?
just
like a goo person.
What do you hold on a second. What do you do in those cracks then? Like what's I'm going down this narrative right here.
I make a floor like slightly more level. because now the cracks are filled in, and I could be like a cleric. I'll work for the government. I'll fill in potholes temporarily.
Again, it's about running a campaign for office. Mike's the goo
person.
These
are the things I can bring.
Every person, every campaign has to have a goo person to make
these
level.
He's really just a pothole politician.
Okay. Here's why I'm the bomb. Okay, check it. I can go through key locks and stuff and just like get through stuff.
I like to imagine that Mike's character is like an evolutionary, like he slowly erodes things.
Yeah.
There. Very slowly. He just gets into the cracks and he's like slowly Mount
so we're
Doom
like, we need to break
fall.
Into this fortress.
Exactly.
Goo man, get in those cracks. We're going to go run a campaign for another year. We're going to come back.
Totally.
See what kind of process you've made.
Here's the thing. It's a long burn. You're not going to see the effects of my character for like 10 years.
I hope that you're a part of like a 10-year campaign. Yes. And like you show up every week. And
you just stay silent.
The DM is like, hey, like, what is your character doing? And you're like, I'm still working on that wall.
Dude,
you do that for 10 years and then they come
the
back.
Grand Canyon, motherfucker!
They come back and there's like a foot gap in that wall now. And they're like, oh, we can finally get in. But now, because we've been traveling for 10 years, we're so powerful that we can just destroy this whole fortress immediately.
Ben was like, pretty tight bitch though, right guys? Check it out. I evolve until I become the T-1000. That's the
end. Wow.
T-1000's a goo dude, and you wouldn't like make fun of him.
There is a Terminator campaign setting. So.
No way!
Oh my God. No. If there's like a pop culture thing that you like, there's definitely a D&D campaign for it. Yeah,
can you play Harry Potter D&D?
We've been working on it. Like, I know some people have systems. It's... I've built my own Pokemon system before.
What?
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's
really?
Like...
What?
Yeah. So there's definitely different ways. Like, people have, like, you know, Judge Dredd?
They
made a whole system for that.
Nice. We could get into that one.
Skyrim,
have
Elder
you ever
Scrolls.
Heard if there's a Harry Dresden D&D? Do you know that?
There's definitely a Dresden.
And apparently it's really good, too.
Oh, we're playing that one. Okay.
Sick. Okay.
Read it, everyone.
Sorry. So getting back
we'll get
into... so you can choose a race, a class, or, you know, your kind of job. And then there's like different attributes, like strength and constitution.
Strength,
or
dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. So strength is like how strong you are, you know, your ability to lift things. Dexterity is kind of about your nimbleness. Can you roll out of the way of things or dodge things? Constitution is like, can you drink a whole vial of poison? And can you still be alive after
that? Like when people say they have a delicate constitution.
Yeah, exactly.
I can just absorb different things. And in terms of rolling out of the way, I just flatten out and roll and stuff
that's
rolls
true.
Over me.
Can I be America?
You absolutely can.
Yeah.
And
I really just dwarf brains. My name's just America.
Phenomenal.
Cool. And how do you choose like how strong you are in one area or the other? Or do you just be like, I'm perfect in everything?
So kind of also how... we think of genetics being somewhat random. Mm-hmm. You just roll your 6 stats before. So there's different ways to assign it, and there's different rules for it. But in general, you just determine them randomly.
So you could just be like, 3s across the board, real plain.
Most dungeons, like, so 10 is average. So, oh, okay. Like, on your usually stats are on a scale of about 1 to 18.
Why?
And... because you roll 3 6-sided dice.
Okay.
Okay.
Makes sense.
So that being 18 being the highest. And so 10 is considered what normal non-super strong people are.
Okay.
In everything, like non-super smart people. And most DMs will let you re-roll if you get anything less than an 8. Because then there starts to be penalties. And like 1 is like a squirrel level of intelligence. Like, so there's
so
all these
me.
Different
okay,
levels.
Cool.
Like they've rated everything... like all traditional creatures out into like different levels of different strengths. And so, yeah, you determine everything randomly and then you usually get a pick which ones go where.
Okay. So there's, what did you say? There's strength,
dexterity, constitution. And then we have intelligence, which is how book smart you are, mm-hmm. basically. And wisdom, which is how wise, how street smart you are.
Cool.
And then charisma, which is like, people used to hate it because it was like this dump stat where you just put the worst score that you had in because it didn't matter. But it's like how good you are at talking your way out of trouble, how good you look, and just your ability
that's all that
to
matters, baby.
Yeah,
so important. Day. So,
yeah,
all day, oval face all
now
day.
Now it's really important.
Oh no!
So the oval face thing is where Nick lost his mind a while back.
Our makeup podcast.
Don't mind him if he starts bringing up his charisma level. Okay, I can see charisma being super important because what does he need to get into this back room? You gotta like fool a security guard and be like, hey man, what's up?
Yeah, exactly. Super pretty. D&D has kind of moved past just being a kick down the door and fight whatever cool monster is inside to becoming like a really interesting role-playing game as people have learned that, hey, I can do whatever I want. Like, I can talk my way through the situation. And so now it's very important. Like, it's as important as the others. But originally, it was just kind of
Okay, so we've got our class, our job, our race. We have our different attributes. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen or heard of, like, that you can be, like, lawful or chaotic. Oh, yeah. What is that?
Your alignment and
your
stuff.
Your alignment?
So
what
it's called
that?
Your alignment. And it's basically what is your general, like, moral stance on things. So if you think about it like a tic-tac-toe board, there's 9 spots, okay? Mm-hmm. On the up and down axis, you go from evil to good. So it goes at the bottom, evil, and then in the middle, neutral, and then at the top, good.
Okay.
Okay, and then on the sideways axis, from left to right, it goes lawful, neutral, and then chaotic. So good and evil is pretty self-explanatory, how good you are, how evil you are. Lawful and chaotic is what you think of like the law as an institution. So do you believe in the rules? And that would be like a lawful neutral is like Judge Dredd. Like he just does the rules. He carries out the law. He doesn't care if it's right. He doesn't care if it's wrong. He's just following the rules. Chaotic good is like Robin Hood. You know, he's like, I'm stealing from the rich, giving to the poor, and he's breaking the law to do it because he sees, you know, that this is good. But sometimes you have to kind of subvert government.
Ooh, interesting.
And so it's this whole spectrum.
Now, do you choose this, or is this also like you roll for it?
No, you definitely choose it, and it kind of goes into like who you want to play. Generally, you can't have a campaign that has evil characters and good characters just because you're going to run into so many situations when you're like, oh, we arrived at this town, and someone's like, I would like to barter for these goods. And someone's like, what if we just murder everyone here and take it? So
burn
you
it,
run
bitch.
Into a lot of...
That's fair.
You know, conflictions.
Did you see how that would create a conflict?
A bit.
Well, I was going to ask, is that where some of those issues come up where the characters begin fighting because maybe someone's like, no, we got to toe the line here. And the other guy's just like, dude, it's for the greater good.
Absolutely.
Okay. I thought when you were first saying this, someone's like, I'm tired of it, Clint. All right, man, you've been dominating this campaign. You know what? We're going to fight.
Well, that happens
this is like really petty.
Too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's the thing is that the people who play D&D come from all different ways and you know, are all different ways. And so some people will totally be like that and other people are like, whatever, it's fine, you know?
Sure. Everyone's different, like you said, but in general, are there people who are just total agents of chaos? They're like, I'm just going to throw some dynamite over there. And you're like, why? Or do most people want to see a story play out and actually, you know, be satisfying? And
yeah, no, there's definitely people who are just like, I'm out here to do what I want. And they're not really here to be a part of, you know, the story. And
Dylan.
that, as a DM, can be pretty frustrating because they're just going to go do their own thing. And that's when it becomes really hard. As a DM, you kind of try and be neutral. You know, you don't want to unfairly punish or help other players. And sometimes with that guy, you know, you're always like...
Yeah, and there was...
When
we were at Emerald Knights at the Dungeons & Dragons night, there was this one guy we were talking to, and, like, everyone hated this dude. Because, like, his character was, like, this, like, sultry, like, courtesan lady. And no matter what the situation, he would just try to seduce his way through it. And he would always, no matter what it was, like, can I just seduce the emperor? Let me seduce the emperor. And they're like, no, we need to, like, he's like, I can just seduce him. It'd be great. And he always would just try to, and no matter, the goblins are attacking, let me just try to seduce him real quick. And he just try to seduce his way through every situation. And they all
love the commitment to it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's great.
Props to keeping to his archetype as a character. However, like, there's a reason I don't really play in shops anymore. And that's because really anyone can come. And that's really cool, and I really like being able to teach people the game, but I also really like knowing those people and knowing that they're not going to be that person.
Yeah, sure.
Because that can really ruin the experience for the other 3 or 4 players.
And that's any game, really.
What?
Whether you're playing a board game or not, it's people... one person is kind of like... especially in a cooperative game, when you know, the alpha gamer is just trying to control everything, it just ruins it for everyone else.
Absolutely.
What's the typical size of a group that plays?
And what's ideal? What's typical and what's ideal?
So, like, the most ideal... and the one that most people try and conform to is 4 players and 1 DM.
Okay.
Okay.
You usually don't go above 6 players because that becomes, again, a logistical problem, is mm-hmm. you have to get everyone's input on things before you do it, and that just takes a lot of time.
Sure.
And then I usually don't go below 3 people because at that point...
3 including you or 3 players?
3 players okay. and 1 DM. Just because you kind of lose... There is an element of gamesmanship to it, even though you can do whatever you want. Like, sometimes you need someone who can cast magic spells
sure.
to have really cool and interesting things happen.
Yeah, and so, like, in a group, I'm guessing you want to be relatively diverse in terms of, like, the characters you're playing. Like, you probably want one cleric. Because I feel like everyone is always going to want to be the person who, like, kicks down the door.
Yeah.
But someone's got to be the guy
no,
healing
Nick,
stuff
No, Nick, that's
the back.
Because you're Gryffindor. That's why you
okay,
think
so
that
Casey's
way.
Casey's the cleric, then. And then...
I would rather be the person who gets to heal everybody any day of the week
you're
than
like,
the guy who goes
yeah, so
in
Casey
head
is
first.
The cleric.
Is there anyone that no one wants to be that... Someone has to be like, oh, I'll be the... I'll
For
be
sure the cleric. Okay, yeah. That's definitely the one that...
Haters.
It's not that no one wants to be it, but it's always...
Puck Wedgie for life.
It's the only...
It's my American Harry Potter house. Okay.
It's the only role that, like, you really need.
Sure.
You don't need it with everything else, but the fact is, like, the game and a lot of the rules were built around having, at some point, the ability to heal magically, because
right.
how else are you going to fight all these giant monsters and stuff? And so it's really the only role that's needed, and it's always a game of like, I don't want to do that. Who's going to be the cleric? Like, who's going to be the cleric? And some people love it. I love being the cleric, but I'm now only a dungeon master these days, so I don't get to be the cleric.
Sure.
And then everyone else just wants to do whatever they want, and that's fine. And you definitely want a diverse group.
Yeah.
Because if you have, you know, 4 wizards, like, no one's going to be able to kick a guy. Like, sometimes you just need to stab
no
someone.
No close combat yeah. at all. They're just like, oh, God!
And it's like, have you seen my matches? I got my pipe isn't lit. I can't get my matches. And it's like, just make a fireball. And you're like, no, I can't make a fireball right now because I can't contain it that small. It would be dangerous. And then the cleric's just like, I got it. Don't worry about it.
That's exactly right.
So that's why our campaign would be dope, because we have someone that is
we
willing and eagerly waiting to be a cleric. And then Nick and I can do... Like, Casey, I just want you to level up your intelligence, your charisma, all your stuff, and we'll just be a couple of goons. Just, like, kick stuff down, and you go to the politician and, like, bribe him, like, don't worry about these guys. Like, they were on a bender last night. Like, they had, you know,
it'll
some
be
problems.
Our general group right now, where you're, like, the smart one, and me and Mike are just like,
yeah. And it's like, they just really want to play goblin golf, so they kept throwing goblins at, like, trees and stuff so you could hit the most trees. So don't worry about these guys. And we're like, all right, cool. So we'll be super successful. Boom.
Yeah, it sounds like a great group.
Speaking of successful campaigns, can we take a minute to talk about our Patreon?
Patreon. Okay, guys. So, okay. Yeah, everyone talking about my segues. That was smooth. Okay. So, guys, we have a campaign of our own, and it's called We Want to Have a Successful Podcast and Have Great Guests and Awesome Equipment and Fun Things for You Guys. So you guys can actually help us with our show by donating to our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/thebrothersmurph. And on there, you can give us $1, give us $5. Nick's always asking for 10 grand. So
10
we can,
G's, baby.
We can actually play D&D in like New Zealand, where they like had like Rohan and whatnot and really get deep into it. You guys can help us do that. And we'll do podcasts from New Zealand. Or whatever, you know, either
or
way.
Or just buy new mics.
Or buy new mics. Most likely it'll be very... That's what they always talk about in game shows. They're like, what are you going to do with the winnings? You're like, I'm going to go to Jamaica. And there's like, I'm going to pay my student loan bill. But that's not sexy for TV. So we can't be like
Sorry,
that for here.
Sorry, guys. I'm not sexy for TV. I'm the practical
no,
one.
No, and that's the truth. All the money does go right back into the show and getting better equipment, getting nice snacks for all of our guests, and just helping us. Yeah, you know, that water right there isn't cheap. It helps us... You know, continue to provide great content for you. We really love doing this and would love your support if you got it to give. So thank you very much for that.
Okay, awesome. So we have a general idea now. We start the game. We've got our characters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you play different. How long does a session, one
Is
session
it predetermined?
Typically take?
There's two ways. You usually start at a particular time and you say, hey, it's going to go about this long, or until there's a great breaking point in the story. So sometimes, you know, you sit down and you're like, we're going to play for 3 hours. And then 2 hours and 45 minutes into it, you've like defeated a boss and you're like, actually, now would be a great time to stop playing.
Does the DM determine that?
It's usually a group thing. Some people are like, I got to work tomorrow. Like, I got to go.
Right.
Or something like that.
So you'll have kind of these big moments planned out. Like, you know that if they go down these paths, we are going to land at this big monster or whatnot? Or is it, are you just freestyling as it goes?
It's a great mix of both, because sometimes we were playing a space game, and I was actually a player in this game, and we were like, oh, we should go to planet B. And the dungeon master was like, in his head, I had everything planned out for planet A. Oh, I never thought that they would go to planet B. And so once we got there, he had to just freestyle his way through the rest of the session.
Wow.
Until he had time to, you know, prepare more. And so that's definitely something as a DM, you're always trying to predict what your players are going to do.
Sure.
Without making them feel like they have to do things.
Okay. And do they always start like at the tavern in the town, or are they like, once you're on the, you know, if you stop at room 3 of the dungeon and you come back next week, do you pick up right there?
Yeah, you generally pick up right from the moment that you left off.
Okay.
Depending on what's happening. If you're in a dungeon, yeah, but if you guys are just hanging out, you know, at the castle that you built with all your cool gold that you won from fighting dragons, then it could be any amount of time.
Okay.
That the players want and that the DM wants, of course.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So I could literally be like, oh man, just kill the boss, I gotta go pee. And then that's the end. And then when you start off, he is like, zip. All right, guys, where are we going next? And you just pick her up right where you left off.
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly.
So how much work as a DM typically goes into planning for this kind of thing? Because you have to know the setting before everything is started, right?
Yeah. So if I already have a setting and I'm not like writing my own setting or something like that, I probably spend 30 hours of work before the game even starts. Just kind of thinking.
This is almost a full-time job.
Yeah, almost. But, you know, that's 30 hours of work over like a month or two of generally preparing for a game. And then weekly, it's probably anywhere between 2 and 5 hours. But it's really just maintenance. If you do all of the work at the beginning, then you only have to adjust for the differences that the players did.
Sure.
And so that work would consist of planning out the world and doing those predictive...
Thinking of characters, kind of, if you're building a dungeon, you know, you want to put some cool traps in there, you want to make it interesting, and you want to have, because D&D is also about fighting monsters, and so you want to have cool monsters to fight, and you want to make sure that there's some cool loot that you get at the end of it. And so you might be thinking about like a particular magic item to build and to give to them or something like that. Or you're like, man, the players did something very unexpected this week. How can I adjust the rest of my story now work with that? And not to ignore it, but to work with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it could be kind of fun, you know, maybe they throw this curveball. You're like, damn, that's interesting. I would never have thought of that.
Oh, for sure.
Let's roll with that. And it really is that collaborative, cooperative story that you're telling. Like, I'm an actor, and this D&D makes so much sense to me for actors, because that's all it is storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so rich and imaginative, and we don't have that opportunity as adults to really indulge our imagination for a long period of time where you can do fantastical stuff, and it's still super fun. That's why we did it. You know, we played so many games as kids.
Yeah.
Why do we need to stop? And I guess we don't need to now.
So how much does it, this is a real noob question, but much does it cost to start up a game? Is there a cost involved in terms of like, do you have to go buy dice, special dice? Do you have to have a map or something?
So in its essence, you don't need anything, but that's like, if you don't care about rules and you just want to play imagination at a table with friends, and that's legitimate. Like, there are people who do that. D&D has what they call a core set of rule books. It's 3 books. It's called the Player's Handbook, the Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Monster Manual. Okay. Player's Handbook has all the rules to creating a character. Master's Guide has a lot of good resources for someone who wants to create a world and create dungeons and such. And a Monster Manual is just a giant index of monsters. And
Who wrote these? Gygax?
He wrote the original one in 1974, but there are now 5 editions of it. And they come out with a new edition. They came out with one 20 years after, which is, it's called Second Edition. They came out with that, and AD&D, which is Advanced D&D. And then they came out with Third Edition. And
they is the International D&D Association?
Yeah, so it's owned by Wizards of the Coast, which is also owned by Hasbro now.
So now
we've got big money. Exactly.
Wow. Yep.
And Fifth Edition came out about a year and a half ago, I think.
I remember hearing about Yeah, the new edition, and that was a big...
And it's great.
I know, because
Billy
bought a bunch of... He bought the Player's Handbook, the Dungeon Master, and like a month after that, they came out with 5th edition,
and he
was so pissed, because it's like no one's playing 4th edition anymore,
Yeah,
4th
edition was really... I felt like it was really rough.
Yeah, I heard 3rd edition heard. Was like the bomb in the standard for a long time.
Yeah,
3rd
edition was what I played until 5th edition.
Sure, Okay.
And so other than those books, and you need a set of those books, and you don't really need the Monster Manual, but you definitely want the Player's Handbook, and you need at least one in your group.
Yeah.
Because that way you can all make your characters and such. And then you should all have a set of dice, generally. And that can be like $10. So if you want to get all...
Regular dice? Regular six-sided
dice? No, they sell special sets. And so there's a four-sided dice, a six-sided dice, an eight-sided dice, two 10-sided dice, because you can create percentages with... You have two 10-sided dice.
Wow. Whoa.
And then a 12, which no one cares about, and it's very, very useless. And then the 20. It's a 20-sided dice, and that's the most important one.
D20. Oh.
Most things in the world are roll a D20. A D20 stands for a 20-sided dice, and you say, like, 1D6 for one 6-sided dice, or, like, 7D6 if you roll 7 6-sided dice.
Right.
So it's usually... 1d20 plus some number, and that number is usually like how good or bad you are at something, and that equals success or failure at a particular task.
So if you're like trying to kick down a door and you have strength 5 and its strength is like 20, are you essentially trying to roll like a 15 and then you can kick down
there's
the door
definitely
kind of thing?
Like, as a DM, this is like all the rules that go into it. There's something called a DC, which is a dice check, and it's basically the number that you need to beat to do a particular thing.
So do you have like a board? Because I've played board games before, but this to me seems different, and obviously because it's so unique to every campaign that you play. So is there like a map that is drawn out that the DM has to do so you know where you're going, or is it all in your head?
Most of the time, it's in your head, and I generally won't even use a map for combat, which is when things like distance become really important, when you're like, my character can move 6 squares per turn, so that becomes really important. Like, I know that 6 squares means 30 feet, and so in my mind, I might be juggling all this, but it's easier for you guys as players to make decisions if you have a concrete ability to look at things. And so it's a dry erase map.
Oh, cool.
It's like a dry erase grid that, you know, you can write on and erase, and... They're like little figurines that you can use or stuff. I used to use like quarters and pennies because like the figurines are also actually really expensive. And so
like
I never want
lead.
Yeah,
crazy.
It's intense, and I don't want to spend the money on that. So yeah, we just use other things, but that's a tool, and these are all tools that you can use, but that aren't necessary. Which is what I like about D&D, is it's not like a high buy-in.
Yeah,
it's really as far as your imagination can take you can go. And that's really nice that you don't have to. It's not, I mean, you guys can all pitch in for one book that you can share among you, and you don't have access being blocked by like, well
that's so cool.
For
so my, okay, I'm in. Why isn't everybody playing D&D?
Yeah, man, why the stigma?
Yeah, there's definitely a stigma. There's a huge thing in the 80s where people assume that, you know, D&D was like the devil's work. And frankly, it's because
that's
people,
fair.
You know, until even, you know, the 2000s, most of the people who played D&D were just people in like a basement, you know, like that very stereotypical picture.
Sure.
Eating
corn nuts.
Just, it never became super mainstream until recently when, as you can see, Stranger Things, they play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
There's a whole episode of Community about Dungeons and Dragons, like it's
Big Bang Theory. They
Judd Apatow was ahead of his time. Freaks and Geeks, they played D&D,
and
then James Franco's like the cool guy, but then he starts playing D&D because it's so fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I don't know why a lot of people don't play it, but also it still has a huge following. Like 5th edition, I think, sold almost 1 million copies of their book, which is in total of like their core books. And that's astounding. Like when you talk about how many people in America, you know, like it's great.
Is it only an American game or is it worldwide?
No, it's definitely worldwide, but I don't think that the rule books are translated into more than 10, 15 languages.
Sure.
You know, someone who is a huge D&D fan is Mr. Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel has said all the time that he wants to make his own D&D movie.
Yeah,
Vin Diesel's a huge fan.
That's so
he's
cool.
Written like the intro for one of the books. He's a huge D&D fan, which I think is great.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
I
already loved Vin Diesel because he was the voice in the Iron Giant.
True.
Fun fact for everybody. And I like forever will love him for that. And now I just like him 10 times more.
Every time they peel back a layer of Vin Diesel, you're just like, damn, you're cooler. Like you could just get by being a douchebag who's like decent enough at acting, but he's like cool as hell on top of it. Like, yeah. Damn it. Damn.
That's awesome.
I would love it if like it was revealed at the end of the Fast and the Furious franchise that they're all just playing a really elaborate car focused D&D.
That would be great.
Oh my god, that'd be beautiful.
Thanks for the idea for a Fast and Furious Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
We should tweet it, Vin Diesel. I guarantee we do that. He's just like, that's the ending for sure. He's got that juice in the series.
Is there like a world or maybe like an IP, like an intellectual property that, as far as you know, isn't in a role playing universe that you would like to see?
Or one that's your favorite to play within? Are you classic?
My favorite one to play in is for sure Firefly Universe.
Ooh.
And that is by far my favorite one. Like, it's got such a diverse set because, you know, it's like Western, but it's also like Chinese, and it's also, it's so cool. And I just have, and I love space. And so that is
by far
the greatest like D&D universe for me.
That's sick. I wouldn't have even thought about it. Of course they have one based on Firefly.
But you make your own characters? You don't play as like Mal or Wash?
No, we usually make your own characters.
Oh my god, that's so cool.
You could basically just remake a crew, but it's your own.
Well,
we
were a part of a crew. We were part of a scavenging crew similar to the Firefly, and we had like a Firefly class ship at first, and then it got blown up. And like, there's the whole story, and it was great because like you got to experience the world in a way that you can't because there's only a limited amount of media about it, which is what's awesome, is that sometimes you want to spend more time in the world. Sometimes you want to be in the Harry Potter universe more than just the books and just the movies allow. And D&D is also a great way to explore that. So That's awesome.
So for listeners who are interested in starting, what do they need to do right now after they're jazzed up after this podcast? Uh-huh. Like, what do they need to do?
You should definitely go to your local gaming store and just ask them when D&D night is. And D&D has, like, as a company, sponsors certain nights and certain events, just like Magic the Gathering does. And so you can show up, and most DMs I know are so interested in teaching new people how to play. And that's the best way to start.
So you found it's a pretty welcoming community?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's going to be an annoying person. Like, there's going to be a guy who just wants to seduce his way past the Emperor and the goblins.
So you're like, anything to get rid of that guy. If you come in, then we have a full game, so that guy can't play. So please come learn how to play.
Exactly. But the hope is that, you know, this is a taste of it, and hopefully you can get your friends, and then you can start your own group, and that's the goal, right? Yeah. To get as many people playing.
Remind us once again the name of the three books we need.
You need the Player's Handbook for sure, and then the Dungeon Master's Guide, and the Monster Manual.
Okay, bam, and those are in 5th edition. That's a great little taste of Dungeons & Dragons. Absolutely. As we've revealed, there's a humongous universe on universe.
I vote a second episode. I need a follow-up episode, guys.
Maybe
we can start a campaign and like
do a little campaign update.
Yeah, a little campaign update.
That'd
also
be great.
I think there's a reason, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't there like a D&D website where you can if you don't have, because one of the problems is like finding a group.
Sure.
Is there, I think it's like Roll D20 or something like that, where you can play like online?
There are so many different websites and different groups, you know. There's like a D&D website. There's Roll20, which is kind of a community based around playing with people in different parts of the like country or the world. Like if you can't, you know, if you live in Michigan and there's just not a good local game store around, or for whatever reason you don't like the one that's near you, Roll20 is like a Skype-based, basically, game system.
Wow.
So you can play from anywhere. And definitely on D&D, on their website, they have a starter kit as well. That kind of comes with some pre-made characters, and it's really great at just getting you into the game. It comes with a little pre-made adventure, so if none of your friends have ever played D&D before, you can still learn. He can learn, or she can learn how to be a DM while everyone else learns how to be a player all at the same time.
That's great. That's great that they have these resources, because again, that can be daunting.
It's a juggernaut.
You're like,
to take. Yeah.
There are so many rules. And it's easy to introduce people to them while you play instead of sitting down and being like, let's talk for 6 hours about the rules of D&D.
Right. You can take us through. Okay, so we're going to try to work out the logistics of getting a game going just so we can do these updates. I'm looking forward to the 4th update where, like, everyone's dead.
Casey killed them.
She's a bad player.
Too much of the cleric.
Casey realized we were holding her back, so she just killed us, took our loot, and is, like, taking over. the world.
She slowly poisoned us over multiple sessions.
Yeah, that's great. That's how she would do it. Yeah.
I have said that that's what I would do.
She would not overtly kill anybody. Yeah. She would just...
Yeah. You know. Like, what happened to Frank? I don't know. Might as well move on. Take his horse. Okay, cool. So that was a great first little taste. Thank you so much for that, Chris. Mm-hmm. We're going to move into our segment now that we end the show with called the Pop Quails.
Mermaid Rose Pop Quails.
We'll come up with a good jingle.
That was the best jingle.
Great jingle.
Casey is not a fan of that one.
The cleric has spoken. The jingle is out.
Watch what you're drinking.
I've been drinking this all night. Okay. So, Chris, we like to do the pop quiz. We like to have our expert maybe give us just a little bit of trivia before we depart for the afternoon here. So we're hoping if you had a couple questions, you can ask us based on Dungeons & Dragons. We're going to see if we are just intuitive enough to get the answers like that. So do you have any questions for us this week?
Well, we touched on some of them. We talked about Vin Diesel.
Yes, we did.
Okay, but there is a star, a big Hollywood star, who made his feature film debut in a movie that was about how bad Dungeons & Dragons is for you in the 80s. Does anyone know which big-time Hollywood star made their feature film debut?
In the 80s.
So this movie is kind of like a Reefer Madness for D&D?
Yes, it is. He was 26 years old. I'll give it to you. It's a guy. He's 26 years old.
I'm 26.
At the time?
At the time of the movie.
Okay. We all get to take our guesses.
Okay. Nick, how about you go first?
Oh, Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer Sutherland. Casey, what do you got?
I'm going to guess Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Dylan, what do you got?
So this obviously wasn't a big movie, right? Like, this is just one of those weird Reefer Madness.
Hey, no extra hints.
Yeah. Shoot the dark.
Okay.
Because I already got the answer right. Fine, doesn't mean you have to stall.
Fine. I'm going to go with Tom Cruise. Wait, no.
Tom Cruise.
Brad Pitt.
Okay.
The other one from Interview with Vampire. I'm going to go George Clooney. Huh. Are any of us at all close?
Well, no.
Damn, I was sure I was going to get that. All right,
none other than Tom Hanks.
What?
Made his debut in a film called Mazes and Monsters.
What?
Which was a film about a guy who basically started to believe that he was his D&D character and that he started going crazy and... Yeah,
that's awesome.
And it was basically like, hey, parents, like, your children should never play this game, like, or they're going to become like...
And that's why we are, like, we don't have Barack Obama playing D&D every day. It's not that ingrained with our culture. Because someone like Tom Hanks, who everybody trusts and loves, is like, it's real dangerous, guys, and we're not going to play it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd hold this against Tom Hanks personally. He was probably just looking for a role. But
he's just so talented.
He definitely was in a movie about how bad Dungeons and Dragons is for you.
Alrighty. Hit me another. I got the next one. Watch it.
Let's see.
14. Nailed it.
What comedian, has had like a huge lifelong relationship with Dungeons and Dragons, and he was also, let's just see. There's a big comedian and he is no longer with us.
Okay.
And he had a huge like Dungeons and Dragons like time in his life.
Comedian no longer with us.
I'm gonna say John Candy. Boom.
That's interesting.
The Great Outdoors is actually about Dungeons and Dragons.
Uncle Buck was his character.
Chris Farley.
Yeah, that was my other guess.
Robin Williams.
The answer is Robin Williams.
Dylan didn't even get to guess.
I apologize.
No, it's okay.
It's okay. You got the right answer.
I finally got an answer right.
Is Sorry, that the wow. first pop quiz answer you've ever gotten?
No.
We didn't just shame the winner.
I'm thinking outside the box every answer. That's why. Ravenclaw.
That makes sense, though. Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah, he had such a
rich imagination all the time.
He'd probably be really good.
That would have been crazy because he'd be playing four characters at once. Like, playing all these guys. He's like, can I just act out every character?
He was in Jumanji, so it's basically
that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay. Robin Williams. Okay.
Okay.
Do you have any more? Or is that it?
No, that's all
that
I got.
Was it.
That's as much as we need. Nick wins the pop quiz with one.
All right. Woo! All right, cool.
I have respect.
Finally, you are a full member of this podcast. I've been crushing it for weeks. Chris, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
No problem. Thanks.
Yeah, really, though.
And I apologize now if you feel obligated to run a campaign for us, but you were talking about you love teaching new people. So
I really hope that we can make that happen. No, that would be great.
Heck yeah.
I do have the Star Wars one. Someone gave it to me for my birthday, but I haven't had a chance to play it. So
boom. Maybe we'll have to do that or some Firefly for Casey. Well, man, that's going to be it for this week, you guys. This was super fun. I'm sure we'll have follow-ups because we only scratched the surface. We keep doing these big topics that are like, we're only doing like the 101 version, you know, like D&D 101, makeup 101, you know, all these different topics. So thank you again for coming on in, and we look forward to having you back. But for now, I just want to talk about our social medias. You guys can follow us on all the forms of social media. Just look for the Brothers Murph, and you'll find us there. Lots of fun extra content. The other main thing you guys can do to really help out the show is give us a rating on iTunes, you guys. Let us know how we're doing. If you guys are really digging the content we have and the guests that we have, let us know. Let us know directions that you think you'd like to see us go. If you have a fun topic you think we could tackle, let us know. Give us hopefully 5-star rating if we're doing a 5-star job.
Please, if we plugged our Patreon, if you can't donate money, donate a rating, please. It will help us so much just for more people to discover the show. Really, on iTunes, that's the main way that other people can find us, is if we're rated highly or people subscribe to our show. So please, 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 if you can, take 2 minutes out of your day to do that. And if you don't know how, message us. We will help. We will walk you through that whole process.
It's super easy. Chris did a great job, so I want everyone to hear his nice, deep voice teaching us about magical lands and how to play around in them. So thank you very much for that. Again, iTunes at the Brothers Murph Get Smart is our podcast, and you can find us there. So we're going to leave it at that, guys. I will say for now, I have been Michael E. Murphy.
I'm Nick Murphy.
Casey Brown.
Ellen White.
And Chris Wolf
was our guest. And we implore you guys, as always, to stay curious.